Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Colts Neck, New Jersey is Jerry Blast. Jerry is President and CEO of Comply Assistant. Jerry, first, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you, Adam. Looking forward to it.
Great to have you. And today we're going to be talking about vendor risk management in healthcare. Now, Jerry, when contemplating a vendor risk management program in the healthcare sector, I'm assuming that it's crucial here, like everywhere else in the business world, to take a risk-based approach. What are some of the key risks to be mindful of?
So, what we've seen is that a lot of covered entities, healthcare providers and payers, et cetera, some of them aren't even sure of their complete list of vendors, let alone the risk that could reside with each vendor. So I think the highest risk is not knowing what you don't know, not knowing your vendor inventory, not having them segregated by what's called inherent risk, which means based on their contract, what they're going to do for a covered entity for their clients. And so really the first step to reduce that really high risk is to make an inventory and divide that inventory up into high, medium, and low inherent risk. That can involve what does that BA do for the client? Do they store information? Are they hosting like in a cloud, using it, accessing it, transmitting it? Depending on what they do, what they need to do in order to fulfill their contract can help to divide them into what's high. So for example, an EMR vendor with a cloud hosted EMR is going to be rated inherently high. And then a vendor maybe that just is looking or using and transmitting PHI, but not storing it, could be rated medium. An example could be like a claims coding consultant accessing a client's, EMR. So that's really the first step. And I think it's worthy to note, as you bring up the vendor risk, that a recent SE Media report stated that 60% of the reported breaches in 2021 so far were caused by vendors, of which one of the biggest one was the Acelion attack, impacted healthcare primarily. The biggest impact was in healthcare, and number of hospitals and other types of healthcare organizations were impacted by that. So yeah, we're on the right topic here. When you have 60% of breaches being caused by third parties, this is the right place to talk from that percentage standpoint to understand what risks are. Once we get past the high level, then you get into granular.
And let's go there next. Now, so much of the data risk these days, as you've already touched upon, does stem from data-related issues. Hackers infiltrate a vendor system and then from there leap over to their clients, or data is mishandled, which happens a lot. How should compliance teams protect organizations from this risk when assessing a potential vendor?
Right. So that's a good lead into the granular level once they get past the high level. And teams need to develop questions or have help from a consulting company for a list of questions that are related to administrative, physical, technical, and organizational controls that a BA should have in place. A good place to start is with the HIPAA rule and the new HICP rule, which is the Health Industry Cybersecurity Practices rule. And best time to get the answers is during the onboarding, the vetting stage, to bring on a potential vendor. That's absolutely the best time. But then you have to do it periodically as well, once they're on board, for change management over time, making sure that things haven't changed too much to introduce new risk. The question set for BAs, I'll just run through a couple of them. So for example, do they actually have a written security management program? Have they done recent assessments? If they're a cloud host, do they have a SOC 2 report? Do they have a process for responding to security incidents? Do they have a DRBC, which is the disaster recovery business continuity? And one really important aspect here that is sometimes overlooked, when you're vetting one BA, they may have 10 downstream BAs of their own. So it's important for the covered entity to know And to get that question answered, do you have downstream BAs? Where are they located? And what do they do for you? And things like that. And also, has the primary BA vetted the downstream BA? And the covenant entity should see the results of that as well. So, I mean, I just touched on some of the granular, but I have, there's a list of probably 40 granular things to consider that really kind of mimic what a covenant entity has to consider for themselves. So when the covenant entity is vetting a BA, in a sense, they're almost asking them the same kind of scope of vetting questions as they would for their internal vetting as well, internal risk assessments.
Yeah, and I just want to delve a little deeper there just for a second before moving on, is that, you know, when you talk about your business associates, they're part of your supply chain, and you make a really good point. It's to remember that every business associate has his or her or its own supply chain too, and that risks in that can pose risks to you as well. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a lot of talk, obviously, and focus on when you're onboarding a new business associate, what you should be looking for. But what should healthcare entities be looking for on an ongoing basis to ensure that nothing has changed that increases the risk level?
Yeah, you kind of hit the nail on the head. So, you know, the initial vetting comes in, and maybe it's 6 months later or a year, maybe they're doing them every year. Really should be doing periodic ongoing assessments and review of the risk mitigation that's occurred since the last one. So usually what happens is the BA gets assessed, there's items that they need to address, maybe there's even evidence they didn't provide that needs to be provided. So next time around, the covenant entity should be looking to see that some of those action items have been completed, if not all, and then go after what has changed, you know, in the past year, whether it's administrative, physical, technical, organizational, and update it and keep going. One of the issues here is that this task is so daunting that it is really tough for covenant entities to have the resources to have this kind of a strong program in place. But when it comes right down to it, though, if they can't do it on their own, they should outsource it. It has to be done. If there's an incident and the covenant entity is audited by the government and they can't show that they have a strong program in place for third parties, then, you know, they're on the line too for some potential penalties and liabilities as a result.
And those liabilities can be rather substantial these days. Now, data isn't the only risk. Earlier, you mentioned that there were something like 40 granular areas that you could identify. Can we take one of them, and what compliance teams should be focused on to mitigate this risk?
Right. So the one thing I thought of here when we say data isn't the only risk is that we're talking about patient lives. And when an attack occurs, it could bring down, like up in University of Vermont Health System was down from a ransomware attack for about 40 plus days. So they had to send their dialysis patients, their chemo patients, to divert them to other healthcare facilities. It could even impact the ICU. Now, a lot of that, though, is not only controlled by vetting third parties, but also, you know, the attack could result internally at a covenant entity. So they need to have an extended business continuity plan. They need to consider, how do you protect medical devices? If the network goes down, should you segment medical devices away from the main network? There's you know, strategies and techniques and controls that can be put in place to minimize that risk. But, you know, but that, when you say data is not the only risk, I mean, even recently, there's been a report of a patient dying as a result of a cyber attack. So, you know, that is a big risk as well.
That's a huge risk and a truly terrifying one. Now, finally, what should compliance teams be thinking about when it comes to managing vendor risk as we hopefully transition from the peak of the pandemic to a more normal time, whatever that may be?
When I think about that, I really think it's the same exercise. It's just ongoing. And And the effect of the pandemic is a great example, because now you have the remote workforce, vendors do too, other things that come into play with that. And so that's a perfect example. What we said before, that would be a change management thing that wasn't in place maybe 2 years ago, that now should be one of those items, one of those 40 items. What's your policy and procedure for remote access? So the bottom line is, it's really repeating the same process that they should be always doing, whether it's annually or whatever time frame, and that's where they can, manage change from the vendors and stay up to date on their controls. So at the end of the day, you could have a vendor that has a really high inherent risk, but after being vetted and after going through assessments, their control risk or residual risk from implementing controls could actually be low. And that's the hope. So if the covered entities can get through that process and either on their own or get some help to do it, that's really the game here when you talk about 60% of breaches coming from third parties.
And I should say that's the hope about getting it under control, both for third parties and for the covered entity itself. Exactly. Well, Jerry, thank you so much for sharing these insights with us today. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.